How do you pack your mind for a trip away from home, from friends and family for the period of a year? That's one of the most important realizations I've learned whilst being here.
Good evening. Welcome to Radio Space Curiosity. On a hot Viennese summer day in July 2012, Sandra Häuptlich-Meusburger talked to Alexander Kumar, currently overwintering at Concordia, a joint French-Italian and Arctic research station. You will listen to an excerpt from this interview. The Concordia Research Station is a permanent all-year research facility on the Antarctic ice cap. Main research fields are glaciology, atmospheric sciences, astronomy and astrophysics, earth sciences, technology, and human biology and medicine. Alexander Kumar is a 29-year-old Oxford-trained medical doctor, scientific explorer, photographer and writer, currently researching for the European Space Agency in Antarctica. Right now, he is living together with a crew of 13 people in complete isolation in the most extreme and remote place on Earth, with 3 months of total darkness and temperatures up to minus 80 degrees. He gives an insight to daily life at Concordia and talks about his unique experiences. First, Alexander Kumar will tell us what brought him to Antarctica.
Well, it's a short story. My name is Dr. Alex Kumar. I'm a British Indian doctor, actually from Oxford. I'm an anaesthetics and intensive care trainee in Oxford. My interest, much like your own, I suppose, is an extreme environment, but more so to do with the physiology and less so, but still relevant, is to do with the psychology. I find man's ability to adapt to individual and extreme environments very interesting. My time spent among Inuit, Eskimo, previously Eskimo, in the Arctic has been a particular inspiration, but so too has been many of the countries I've travelled in. I've travelled through probably 65 countries, and I'm only 29 years old, but yeah. I've seen an awful lot of the world, and more so it's people, and I realise people make the place, and Antarctica is very, very different to anywhere else in terms of this is the only place on Earth where we're not naturally adapted to in so many ways, and there's no indigenous local population, or to my knowledge there never has been since of course the onset of ice, because before there was ice here it was jungle, which is another interesting thing, that 3,000 meters below my feet stands an old ancient forest of sorts. So very interesting. But I came down here because of the love for Antarctica, for the love of extreme environments, but more so the love of polar history, not just the Arctic, but Antarctic. I think this is the most unique personal journey you can undergo. And when I say personal, it's the dark hours in the middle of the night that really you really start to find you know yourself even better. And you have to be strong to deal with whatever may come from that. But also the teamwork. Antarctica, your washing machine can break here and you need to know how to fix it or learn how to fix it. And it's only as a team that you can survive. So there's various unique elements that draw people here. But I think once people have suffered the infection of polar attraction, the mysterious, strange attraction that the poles have to humans, I don't think you can ever break that. I don't think there's ever a cure.
How long will you be there?
In total, 1 year.
1 year. And how many people stay at the base right now?
Right now, we're in our eighth winter over. So this is the eighth year people have wintered over here, and since 2005. And with that, there are 13 people here, 13. That's a crew of French and Italians predominantly, one Russian, and myself, a British Indian, but UK citizen. There's one female resident and the rest are 12 males.
Only one female. So what can you just describe your daily routine, or what are you doing from morning to evening?
Well, it depends on the day. Of course, we have a long working week here. It's Monday to Saturday, in fact. I'm running back-to-back research, a research protocol which includes all of the planned experiments. It's rather difficult and challenging in that my work has to fit around other people's schedules. Obviously, the mechanic needs to keep the engines running for the station to keep us warm and alive. The cook needs to care to his duties in terms of the kitchen. So my research is human physiology and psychology for the human spaceflight program for the European Space Agency. But I'm predominantly employed by EPEV, the French Polar Research Institute. And of course, Concordia Station is a joint EPEV and ENEA, that's the Italian Antarctic Program Initiative. But in terms of my day-to-day living, generally, I'll wake up in the morning, go upstairs to have some breakfast, read some of the news, maybe, when people are available, do their research, their first part of the research in the morning, you know, and then have lunch around 12:15. After lunch, I'll have a coffee, talk to people, you know, talk about life back home, talk about some news that we've heard or read from the morning or the previous night, and you know, then go back to work. Some people on the station go to sleep, you know, because of the strange effects of the sleep patterns here, in that with the three months plus of darkness, people struggle, and they continue to struggle through until even the first plane arrives in November, because once your circadian rhythm goes off here, it's very difficult to reset it without a cause. But later in the afternoon, I'll spend most of the afternoon doing research until about 6 p.m., 7 p.m. sometimes if it goes on. It may involve blood taking, exercise, tests, various cognitive tasks, questionnaires and so forth. Around 6:30, perhaps, if I finish, I'll go to the gym for 45 minutes, which has become a very important part of my day, in that not only does it help you keep fit and exercise, where some people on the station may not be able to go outside as much as others in terms of their jobs and roles, it also helps to tire your mind and body out to help you sleep, I've found as well. Dinner comes around 7:45 p.m. every day. It's the same timings for meals, and meals have become exceedingly important in setting this cycle and rhythm for us all. If the chef didn't serve lunch at lunchtime, we wouldn't have any idea of what time, or our bodies wouldn't have any idea of what time the day was, you know, in terms of sticking to a normal rhythm. So meals are an exceedingly important part of the day. It is a general base on a rule on the base that everyone should stick to the meal times as a general rule. But unfortunately, even some people have started going through cycles of free running. That's where the sleep and body cycles end up free running, meaning they just continually cycle through. It's as if a washing machine didn't stop at the end of its cycle and just carried on. And you could be sleeping in Shanghai's time zone one day, Easter Island the next, and New York the next. So we're world travelers here. We travel all around the world. In the evening, dinner, we play American pool and sometimes watch a film. But I generally go back and do repairs on my research, prepare for the next day ahead, and sometimes have to put people to sleep twice a week for their research, for overnight sleep data. So at least two or three of my nights each week is taken up by research, and similarly I have to wake them up in the morning in order to, or be around when they wake up to do continue that research. So it's challenging, but it's a good job. Different countries have different cultures and different ways of designing things. I'm always impressed when I go to Scandinavia especially, and you know, to an even more extreme extent Japan, in terms of the small but well-designed and functionality of the space that they have. A lot of places like America have too much space, and therefore not a lot of thought goes into that space. But I find that places like England now are you know, running out of space, and we're building upwards as opposed to outwards, and making the most out of the room we have. And Concordia certainly makes use of every recess, much like the ISS. It's very well planned, you know, obviously it can't be perfect. There are some problems, but, you know, otherwise it's extremely well planned for the amount of space we have. And for 13 people, it's exceptionally good. The only thing I would say that's missing here, that we all miss, is a space inside to run around in. We have a gym room, but no space where we could play football, basketball, or, you know, badminton or volleyball. It would be great to have a building like that to do that. I realise that the South Pole station has such a facility, and I think that would add a lot to our environment, especially in the deprivation we undergo.
And how is the temperature inside the station?
Room temperature is normal, as would be expected. What's not normal is the humidity. It's one of the driest environments on Earth where we are. And with that, you know, it can get very dry inside.
Okay, and outside, how often are you outside the station?
I try to go outside every day, if not in the morning, in the evening. And I'm quite an enthusiast for photography, of course, with one of the most beautiful night skies. It's an opportunity not to be missed, really, as well as what's important is getting outside and clearing your mind, you know, and breathing, feeling like you're breathing air. Even though it's very cold, it does make a significant difference to be able to go outside and feel that, because otherwise it is just inside one station, as would have been the Mars 500 project.
You made beautiful photographs. Some of them are all over the news. There was a recently one you took for ESA.
Yeah, the Milky Way and the Aurora.
Yeah, wonderful.
Thank you very much.
Food. Do you have a greenhouse or a source for fresh food?
You know, alongside the sports hall, that's one of the things that Antarctica, you know, this station is particularly missing. But it comes, you know, with caution in that the Antarctic Treaty bans the import of any, you know, particular types of seeds and various organic products. So, or cautions the import on them. So with that, you know, you have to be aware of those kind of things. But the South Pole station, again, has a active greenhouse. And I hear from my friend who's a doctor there that they have one leaf of lettuce and every week each, and perhaps even a tomato every now and again. So, you know, every couple of months. So it's an incredible feeling. You know, I was talking to someone here today about what we miss the most and what we would like the most. And our two top things were salad and tomatoes. So there you go.
Okay, so you eat only prepared food or food from cans?
Yeah, there's dried, canned, tinned, or prepackaged food. We do have oranges that are frozen, but of course they've been frozen now for 5 or 6 months, and some even longer. So it's not fresh.
Okay, so that's hard for 1 year, I suppose.
Of course, you know, but that's one of the challenges, you know, you accept that in coming here. It's certainly, you know, we can't go and knock off a penguin and eat a penguin here, principally because we have no animals within 1,000 kilometres. But more so importantly, because, you know, what happened 100 years ago of pemmican, bush and all the other different foods that they ate, you know, mainly seal and penguin based. Are illegal now, of course, but it's a challenge, but it's perfectly reasonable. And when you compare it to the possibility of a manned mission to Mars, you know, no one's got ill as a result. And the human body, I've realised in all my years of travelling, is extremely good at adapting itself to different environments, whether it be hypoxia or high altitude or different nutrient intake. You know, we know enough now to be able to prevent things like scurvy, which ravished expeditions of the past. So it's an interesting challenge, but, you know, it's one that we all accept and we get on with. There's no question about it.
You said that it's kind of a rule that the crew eats together.
No, there's no police here. There's no punishment. Antarctica is a very peaceful continent. There's no weapons, no war. So rules are more guidelines. And everyone, you know, chooses to respect those as best as they can. But you have to bear in mind, we're living in the most extreme environment on Earth. And so people have different challenges at different times. So we're all very understanding to one another that if someone doesn't come to lunch, they probably have their own reason. But that's not to say we won't check on them and check that they're okay. But it's just to say that we accept that different people have different challenges.
And when you sit together and talk, what is your favorite topic?
Well, everything. We talk about our history and experiences. You know, we share our own places where we've been, jobs, experience in life, family, friends, you know, common interests. We talked about sport recently over the Euro 2012, and I'm sure it will happen with the Olympics, that we talk about that. Talk about politics, about who's, you know, we've had a new French prime minister in office now over the last few months. So that was obviously mentioned, being on a French station. But we talk about ourselves, how we're dealing with things. We talk in French, Italian. We share, you know, our different glimpses of other languages like Russian. And we also share different areas of the world with each other where we've been, in terms of we often sometimes give slideshows of photographs that people have taken in various trips. And we have different themed evenings based around that. So a Japanese evening, Indian evening, Chinese evening, you know, where the food is prepared and the costumes may be prepared around those special times. But, you know, we also talk about what we'll do after Concordia. A lot of winter focuses on the future and not so much the present, you know, where the mind tries to distract away from the challenges. And obviously, we all have times that we want to spend with family and friends, and very much look forward to that. So we often share those plans with other people.
But it sounds like you're a wonderful team in Antarctica.
Yeah, I mean, you can't. I think the thing is, Sandra, to say is you can't become a wonderful team or a wonderful family. There's no such thing, you know, as a perfect team or perfect family. But you can't become such an entity, such a strong team, without going through problems and challenges and finding solutions to them. And I think that's a test of character of the people I have around me and myself, that, you know, when times are hard, you don't get upset and throw the towel down and, you know, say I quit. That you carry on, you struggle on together, and that's what builds the team that we have, you know, going through the challenges.
And when you have free time, what is your favorite leisure activity?
I love going outside and looking up at the stars, you know, even if it's a windy, horrible day, I like opening the door and stepping outside. That's what I'll take away from me from here, is going from room temperature, that protected environment, to the harsh exterior that lies and takes the oxygen and air away from your lungs on that deep breath of minus 70 degrees Celsius air. That's unforgettable. You'll never get that anywhere else, you know. Opening your freezer door on a hot summer's day won't even get the same temperature difference of nearly 100 degrees Celsius. So, you know, it's incredible. But, you know, we've been very lucky. Every now and again, we get to swim outside in minus 70, would you believe? You know, we have our meltwater tank that has to be cleaned and sterilized. And before we do clean it and sterilize it, we will have a swim in it. And that's an unforgettable experience as well. But I read. I don't have a lot of spare time on the base to play with. But, you know, I enjoy watching films. I enjoy watching foreign films. I enjoy reading polar history and comparing what we have now to what they had in the past. And I guess I compare I like staying in touch with the world in terms of talking to new people like yourself. You don't know what it is to talk to someone new here, in terms of if you only talk to 13 people continuously, an additional person can bring a whole wealth of colour, a plethora of colour to your week. You know, it's a genuine enthusiasm for reaching out and talking to different people and understanding the way the world works. So thank you for that.
So it seems you are never bored, right?
Well, you know, I fear boredom, especially down here you have to keep your mind and your body as busy as you can with whatever tasks you can. I've found that the people that have trouble in Antarctica are the people that either don't come down here with defined roles or jobs, and those that don't adapt well to a standard discipline. You have to, keep to a ritual. It is a very ritualistic place, and as soon as that starts to break down, you need other activities to fill in. I'm very fortunate to like very many things. It means I'm continually distracted, but also live in continual curiosity for everything around me. But more so, I'm very happy to have a hobby like photography here, that you can take something from a basic standing and develop into a great skill. And that's something I've enjoyed and got me in closer relationship with the environment I live in, both inside and outside.
What did you bring from home with you? How did you prepare for your 1 year stay?
I tell you what, Sandra, a bit of a cheating answer to that question is what I realized, which is you cannot pack your bags, very easily to come out here. You never know what to bring. It's like packing for a holiday that you don't know where you're going. But more importantly, I would forget all physical objects and more focus on the psychology of saying, how do you pack your mind for a trip away from home, from friends and family for the period of a year? That's one of the most important realizations I've learned whilst being here.
But did you succeed?
I think so, yes. I'm very lucky to have a very confident and controlled mind, in that I've been in so many extreme environments and so many dangerous situations. I feel like a cat with however many 9 lives, It's I've already spent a fair few of those lives, whether it be at gunpoint in Cambodia or nearly having my legs chopped off in India by dangling them outside of a train as they came into a railway station in rural India. So I've been very fortunate to learn a great many things about myself at a very young age. And I think that only goes to stand in good stead here, and put my mind at rest in terms of where I see other minds have been troubled by certain things. I've been able to remain very strong, and I think that's very important as being a station doctor over winter, that if other people start to see you break down, it's going to really affect the group and the morale. So you have to hold it together, if not for other people.
And what would you suggest someone else or the next crew to bring?
It's a very difficult question because we miss so much, and a lot of the stuff you can bring that I would say bring will die and fade like tomatoes. But, it's simple things. Anything from your home province or territory, not just your own country, but I found that some of the most special things people have bought and contributed to the group, maybe a local bottle of the local, produce of alcohol, for example, from the local, province, or a particular type of or anything else that may be local. I think it's the people that make the place, and certainly where the people are from originally help to make bonds and give a better understanding about themselves to other people on the base.
And in terms of perception, what colors do you perceive, or sounds or smell? Which colors, sounds or smell do you associate with your home now?
Very interesting question. I'll give you an example. One of the glaciologists here caused a leak and a flood of water that leaked from the top floor to the middle floor. When I opened the door from the stairs and walked out, it was the sound of raindrops. And that reminded me of the north of England, where I grew up, because it always rains, or nearly always rains there. So in terms of sounds and, tastes and smells, I would say that all senses where you live have colour, not just in sight, but in smell. But here, everything becomes black and white. And, there is an element of sensory deprivation, of course. But, you have to learn how to get the best, like as if someone who is partially or completely loss of sight. You have to understand how to get the best from your hearing if you can't see, and vice versa. So there's an element of that, and that's an additional challenge.
Okay, that's interesting. And in the interior, for example, do you work against that black and white feeling? For example, do you put up photos, posters, or do you use brighter colors?
When you start college or university, you go to a blank room that someone else has used, and it's a generically designed room. You have the ability, with what you've bought and what you can make here, to recreate that space. So in a way, you become an interior designer for your own mind's well-being over winter. So yeah, I put up photos. I'm looking right now at a photo of the Sahara where I've stood, panoramic. I'm looking at three pictures of the Amazon, one of a boat going down the river surrounded by rainforest, one of Manaus in Brazil, a city of the opera house there that was built 100 and more years ago, where I used to take coffee and watch opera in the middle of the Amazon, and one of giant lily pads. I've also got photos of our home of Derbyshire in the north of England. I've got a map of the Arctic and Antarctic. I've got a bookshelf with various books on. And I've got a couple of calendars and birthday cards left over from May, which my family had pre-prepared for me and put within my luggage so I could open them here. And I also have a leaf that someone had bought here that was preserved and dried within a frame. And that's up on my wall as well, that I've inherited from a previous winter over person. But apart from that, it's a pretty generic room. You know, we have our various personal objects, but you're limited by your weight allowance, so you can't bring your whole world out here.
But that sounds great.
It's a simple things in life, and that's another lesson I've learned from Winterover. I fear coming back using money and using a credit card to get money out and standing on Piccadilly Circus in London, you know, with so many people around, and standing in a supermarket wanting to buy fruit, wondering which fruit to pick up. I fear those times because life here is so simple, and you realise that we are. Ultimately, we don't need this complicated life that we built up for ourselves, and that should anyone ever go to Mars or the moon, they don't need to take a cash machine with them and all these complicated devices. You can actually live very happily and very simply, and that just substantiates the realization I've undergone in every single tribal, Aboriginal and Indigenous community I've lived in, from the Arctic to the Amazon. You don't need this complicated life we've built up, you know. Music is a luxury, and it's seen as such here, you know. It's being able to see a new film is a luxury. Being able to see a film at all, we consider a luxury. So it's remembering, going back to your basics, and remembering that village life in rural Africa, rural India, and the rural Amazon, you know, and realizing that we already have so much. Why do we need more?
I suppose your stay in Antarctica will change you a lot in terms of...
I wouldn't say... No? You know, I've already changed a lot in 28 years of being on the planet and seeing as many places and staying in so many communities as I have. I think my body and mind has already been bent and shaped by society's pliers, if you can catch that analogy. But it certainly changes everyone that comes here for the better, and sometimes, you know, unfortunately for the worst. But, you know, it's hard not to be changed. I hope I can adapt back into the life I once had, and I look forward to doing so. But at the same time, we all fear it because of the reasons I mentioned. It's a strange thing to be away from the world for a year, and certainly living in this particular environment, not just Antarctica, but Dome Sea, Concordia Station, is the closest you can come in isolation and deprivation and extreme environments to living on the surface of Mars. So that's else that's often overlooked.
You are listening to excerpts from an interview with Alexander Kumar, overwintering at Concordia in Antarctica.
Thank you, Alexander, for sharing your unique experiences.
To read more about Alexander's updates, And to look at his beautiful photographs, follow his blog, alexanderkumar.com. This is a radio broadcast by Sandra Häuplig-Meusburger and Verena Holzgetan.